in for Mike Malloy. I'm Laura Flanders. Glad to be here with you all on Nova M. It is just about six and something minutes after the hour, and I'm ever so glad to be here. How are you tonight? The number to call in is 800-989-1480. That's 800-989-1480. And we're going to be talking about the day that Chicken Little croaked. Yep, you heard the news already today, I'm sure. In a relatively narrow vote, 228 to 2005, the House rejected the most sweeping government intervention into the nation's financial markets since the Great Depression. Not my words, the words of the Washington Post. The Great Depression, it's right out there. Sweeping government intervention, it's right out there. The House refused to grant the Treasury Department the power it wanted. The House, in effect, rejected the all power to the Paulson plan. Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, he was the guy that was going to benefit most, as far as I can see, from this situation. He was the guy who was going to get the blank check to spend up to $700 billion doing relatively, well, whatever he liked. No oversight, no chance for review by any court, by any agency. There was going to be some minimal review in the Democrat-led House version of this proposal, but the White House version, as it came out of the gate, wasn't that changed. And you know what? Even as the leadership of the Democratic Party, and frankly, the leadership of the Republicans too, tried to push this package through because they were hearing it from the White House, they were hearing it from Wall Street, they heard it from someone else too. They heard it from you. If you'd been in Congress these last few days, you would have heard phones ringing. You would have heard phones ringing in the House Speaker's office. You would have heard phones ringing in the Deputy Whip's office. You would have heard phones ringing in the Majority Leader's office, in the Minority Leader's office. 9 to 10, according to everyone I've spoken to, those calls were from voters saying, don't do it. Those were calls from constituents saying, don't do it. Those were calls from constituents who... maybe you called. Did you call Congress in the last few days? Did you make your feelings heard? Because I think what happened these last few hours is truly significant. There couldn't have been a greater push from our friends in the media. And if you want to call in on this, you can. 800-989-1480. 1-800-989-1480. And the president. Well, you heard his speech Wednesday night. The sky's going to fall. The flood's going to come. The earth's going to rise and swallow you up. Typically, a president's role in times of concern is to calm people. President Bush did, well, you guessed it, the opposite. Does anyone feel calm? Did anyone feel calm last week? President Bush, his speech on the economy was the opposite of calming. It was a crazy-making speech. As far as I can see, it was intended to throw as many people as possible into a panic so they would go ahead with this plan. $700 billion for his Treasury Secretary sounds nice. Let's remember, in a panic, our Congress signed a 400-page Patriot Act without reading it. In a panic, they granted the president power to wage war if he saw fit, which of course he did. In a panic, they okayed warrantless spying and immunity to the telecoms for violating our privacy. So, of course, the president and his buddies thought that in a panic they would go for this too, this economic coup, all power to the Treasury Secretary. The president wanted a check. Well, you know what? He and the Congress and the nation got a reality check. You can't cry the sky is falling to people on whom it already fell. You can't chicken little those who are living the reality of crisis. The administration said we got to give him what we want, what he wants, the president, or terrible things will happen. John McCain said the same. You got to do it. You got to do it. The sky's going to fall. Well, you know what? Plenty of us have been living through terrible sky-falling times for years already. Look around. The roofs have been falling in, the water's been rising around some Americans for years. I said last week on the TV show that you can watch on the internet, on satellite, on cable, you can check it out at grittv.org, blue grit, true grit, grittv.org. I said, we owe it to those Americans who are not new to an economic crisis, who are not fearing one, but who have been surviving one all this time, just getting by. We owe it to them not to give a blank check to the few who set our rigged economy up this way. And I said, looking to November, we owe our neighbors some respect. We have an election coming up. We have no reason to be rushed into handing over our treasury to the Treasury Secretary now. We have no reason to give in to an economic coup before we've had a chance to vote. Let's make this election an election about change after all. Let's change our responses to the terror tactics from the top and start making our choices based on listening to the real fears of real people feeling the pain right now below. Well, I'll tell you, I think today is the day that the American people did exactly that. They sent that message to Congress. It was a narrow vote, 228 to 2005. We can go through the roll call if you like. You're going to hear that it was Republicans that bailed, and maybe that's true. They didn't want to go out there against their own constituents so soon ahead of an election. The Democrats, I spoke to Representative Maxine Waters earlier today for my program, Grit TV. She said she thought it was about 50-50 chance that this bill was going to go through. And she said that if there was significant Republican support, she'd vote for it. Now, she did vote for it. Interesting vote. We can talk about why that might have happened. She voted for it because she's concerned about 401k pension plans. She's concerned about the pension funds of trade unions and labor groups invested in the stock market. She voted for it because she believed there were enough provisions to help homeowners. There weren't enough, but there were more than they started out with. But she said, we are not, Democrats are not going to be left carrying this if the Republicans bail out. Because the Republicans and the Democrats both have been hearing from their constituents 9-1 against this package all over this weekend, and the phone calls haven't stopped yet. So some are saying the Republicans shot themselves in the foot, are going to be looking like the spoilers. Others are saying, well, Nancy Pelosi's speech on the floor was too partisan and that turned Republicans off. Some, maybe you heard Lou Dobbs tonight, are saying, what we need is a populist uprising. It's the elites that have done us in. He's going to take this in a direction you do not want to go. But let's focus on what we can do from here on in. And this is what I think. I think we need to celebrate, ring the bells for the end of Reaganomics. We need some shot of something to get us through the next 3 months, and then we need a new administration, a new ideology, a new policy, new attitudes, and to get it, we, you and me, we the people, are going to have to work. Do we have on offer this November the candidate of our dreams? We do not. But you know what? FDR wasn't the candidate of anyone's dreams either. He wasn't the radical New Dealer that he turned out to be when he first got elected. What pushed him, what pushed a moderate to a place of rethinking some basics was a movement. And that's where we come in. I think you saw some effective organizing and protest these last few days. And I want to hear from you if you took part in a protest. I went down to Wall Street last Thursday. There were demonstrations all across the country, started by some guy with an email. And I saw hundreds of trade union organizers. I saw scores of peace activists and housing rights activists. And I saw a handful of brokers out there squealing, whining losers. Well, who's lost in this? Henry Paulson. Who's won? We the people. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Laura Flanders. Yeah. All right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. The number to call is 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Off to the bottom of the hour, we've got a very special guest in the studio. He's the author of Plunder, the book, and the director of In Debt We Trust. He's just been on Wall Street with Jesse Jackson, among others. His name is Danny Schechter. He'll be with us, the news dissector, at the bottom of the hour. There's a bunch of you wanting to call in. It's not that I don't think there should have been any action by government for the state of our economy, for the sake of our 401ks, for the sake of our basic Wall Street and Main Street integrity. Something should have been done. I just don't think this is the package we wanted. We don't need to rush. We don't need to give $700 billion. We don't need to give all power to Henry Paulson in perpetuity and say that many times fast. What we need is a bill to ban, I don't know, predatory lending. That would be nice. A way for government to take over some of these struggling banks, not just the debts of the banks, but the assets of the banks. I'd like a bill doubling the minimum wage. I don't know, establishing a cap on maximum wages would be nice. I'd like a Tobin tax on all transactions in finance, insurance, and real estate, including currency transactions. Let's bring some of these freaky bankers who got us into this mess into Congress to testify. Then let's fire them without compensation. We want serious regulation of Wall Street, folks. And then you know what we want? We want more, not less, public spending on public, not private projects. We need long-term investment, sustained stimulus. We can throw out all the old lies about free market economics. You can't grow the deficit. You gotta shrink the government, because they threw that stuff out already. They threw that out when they waged an endless war with no exit plan and occupation of Iraq and lost $9 billion along the way. No matter. They threw out all that can't grow the deficit stuff when they accepted a $1 trillion debt. They certainly threw out the can't grow the deficit argument when they asked us to add $700 billion to our debt. So I say, take it slow. Let's make a plan that makes sense, and let's make a plan that starts by giving support at the bottom, not giving rescue to the messer-uppers at the top. All right, let's hear from Gary on the line in Madison, listening on the mic. Hi, Gary, how are you? Glad to have you with us.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, well, this is how I'm doing. How about you?
Well, I was listening to your show, and I, as an amateur financial follower, I agree with some of the things you said, disagree with others. Most of it's a moot point. I think that we have to do something. I mean, government absolutely has to do something in order to keep the markets liquid, you know, to prevent a freeze-up. Otherwise, we're going to be facing catastrophe.
But they don't have to do $700 billion, and they don't have to do all power to Paulson, and they don't have to move as fast as they've been moving.
I think that the biggest piece that I have a serious problem with is that, you know, the CEOs, people who were involved at the upper echelon of the situation, should not be allowed to be paid anything. You know, there should have been a serious cap on. You know, they should earn $25,000 for the year and be happy about it, you know, after orchestrating this debacle that we're all now being faced to deal with. It's a travesty.
Yeah. I mean, there are people out there saying, let's have a bill that makes a cap. Let's have a maximum wage that's 10 times the minimum wage.
I've seen charts that show the growth in the differential between what the lowest earner in the country and what the highest earner in the country, you know, earned. The disparity between the two has grown exponentially to the point where, you know, they're earning ridiculous sums of money. And there's two schools of thought about whether there's a finite amount of wealth that can be grown, right, in an economy, or whether your growth is infinite. You know, it can continue to...
I think we learned, Gary,
evolve.
That growth is not infinite. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. I'm going to go to Kathy in Michigan just to get another caller in before we go to the bottom of the hour. Very quickly, Kathy, glad to have you.
Yes, three quick points. First of all, I called everyone I could and told them absolutely no bailout.
Good for you.
As far as I'm concerned, they're all criminals, and they ought to be charged under the RICO laws and everything repossessed from them that they've made over these years. If Congress insists on helping them, then I think that they should fire all the CEOs. Barring that, they should all have to work like Iacocca did for $1 until they start making a profit again. $1 a year, that is. And
all right, sounds like you've got a good plan, Kathy. I like it. Now, if only we can get some folks to pay attention. I appreciate the call. We'll take more calls after the bottom of the hour break, where I'll be joined by Danny Schechter, the news dissector, the author of Plunder. We'll do that, and we'll take a whole lot more calls. You know, there are a lot of ways we could have done this differently, and maybe we'll get that chance. Let's have some kind of resources trickling up, not trickling down for once. And, yeah, let's have oversight, the real stuff. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. You're listening to the Mike Malloy program. You can call in on 800-989-1480, 989-1480. It's a toll-free call. So what do you think? The bailout package that the president was all for, well, it just crashed. And now Congress is going on vacation for a couple of days. So they may be able to come back with an alternative plan before the end of the week, but we've got a pause moment here. I suggest we use this pause moment to figure out a better looking package, one that actually would have some stimulus for the rest of us and a little bit less power to the Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson. But hey, that's just me. I don't think we have to rush about this. We have to do something. We have to do something short term. Long term, though, we have a chance to make much bigger changes than we'll ever be able to make if $700 billion worth of our hands are tied behind our backs by a panic, sky's gonna fall pushed measure that might have been passed tonight. Here to talk about what he thinks of all of this is a very special guest and friend of the program, Danny Schechter. He's the author of the book Plunder, and he's the man behind the movie In Debt We Trust. Some of you may know him as the news dissector. Danny Schechter, you were just down in Wall Street today.
I was. Reverend Jesse Jackson and union leaders here in New York had a rally, one of many that have been taking place in the last few days, railing against this bailout, pointing to various alternative possibilities, challenging the members of the unions to get involved more in this issue, noting, you know, that the homeowners who are facing a foreclosure, 3.5 million families, were not really being helped by this measure. At least there was a very vague promise to help them, nothing very specific, and that the people who seemed to be the beneficiaries of this were the very banks and institutions that created or contributed to the problem in the first place.
So I'm assuming the folks there would have been happy had they known the package was about to fail.
Yeah, I think everybody thought it was going to pass, because here you had the president, here you had the congressional leadership, here you had Jim Cramer raving on CNBC, saying that this must be passed, you know, or the world will end as we know it. There was a tremendous amount of pressure, and Paulson, of course, working the Congress, he's the Republican Secretary of the Treasury, Goldman Sachs, the guy that knew Wall Street, who was recommending this. He kept it real simple, a 3-page proposal that even members of Congress could understand, because because many of them, you know, have signed on to legislation like the Patriot Act, which they didn't read. So, you know, this was an attempt by him to create a crisis. This has to be done in the same amount of time that God created the world, okay? 7 days. And we must do it immediately.
And he made a few mistakes, let's face it.
Or else, okay? And, you know, at the end of the day, people, I think, resented being pushed, pressured, cajoled to do this on the one hand. On the other hand, I think that there was, you know, two different streams of opposition. One was the sort of the Democrats who are saying, hey, what about economic justice? This isn't fair. This is benefiting people who already have done very well in our economy. And then you have the Republicans who are going to save the Republic from communism. You know, that this bill would mean the government takeover of our economy. It's mm-hmm. nationalizing everything. It's socialism with a big S. Paulson is a secret, you know, commissar of some communist conspiracy. And so that mobilized them to basically say we're taking a stand for everything we believe in. Now, these two groups had nothing in common, but together they created a climate on talk shows and across the country that led to a complete tune out and turn off by the public. Mm. People said, you know, I'm against this.
And
you know?
It wasn't I mean, interestingly, looking at the roll call of the final vote, and it came in at about 2 o'clock this afternoon. The no's, the people who voted against it, 95 Democrats, 133 Republicans, more or less reversed. 140 yeses, 65 yeses, Democrat, Republican, close totals, 205-228. But the significance to me of how many no's within the Democratic ranks. And here you had that Democratic leadership pushing for this stuff. They didn't get the support they were looking for either.
Right. So, you know, here we have a fragmentation. You know, it's the old line, when the center doesn't hold, things fall apart. And they fell apart and they fragmented. And, you know, here are a lot of people in Congress going along with this, A, because they didn't have anything else. They didn't have a plan B. They didn't have their own plan. Secondly, they were feeling like we can't be blamed. What if the economy does tank and we didn't vote for this? Mm-hmm. People are going to say, you know, who lost China? Who lost the American economy? We're going to be blamed for this, so we have to go along. And I think, you know, Obama reluctantly at first and then grudgingly at second and then with, quote, principles and conditions, et cetera, sort of supported it. McCain also was brought in, you know, slowly but surely to basically support it. And, you know, so it showed how little, you know, how the people who are the kind of big representatives, the leadership, the candidates, everything, nobody was really speaking for the anxieties mm-hmm. of the public. And there's a lot of fear out there about what's happening. What do I do with my money?
Now, this could go in any direction. I'm reading from, believe it or not, Fortune magazine. You've got the headline in a piece that ran this morning. A month of historic government interventions shows signs of triggering a political version of climate change, unleashing a new era of class fury that could hurt U.S. companies, business leaders, and wealthy investors for years. Here you've got Fortune talking about class fury. Danny Schachter also, in a sense, talking about class fury. The problem about class fury is it can either go in a kind of progressive direction or you're directed, you know, by people like Lou Dobbs. It could really go someplace
right,
else.
Right, and here we have, you know, the New York Times this morning, before this happened, saying Wall Street seeks signs of response in the markets. You know, they were doing this to save the markets, the capital markets. They're the people who we have to, you know, help. And the whole measure was framed that way, as to mm-hmm. save the markets. And so
people didn't buy it.
Well, they rushed over the weekend. You know why? Because the Asian markets open on Sunday night, our time. So, you know, they would have something to show that the big American government was stepping in. And the Asian markets fell. Then the European markets fell. And then Wall Street went through the biggest single day loss in any day. You know, with you know, the word 777 is now replaced 666 as the hex.
It fell 777 points.
Yeah, on our government. So, I mean, I'm not taking pleasure in this because, you know, I wish people had, you know, kind of a clear idea of what this means. But we do know, okay, that there is no sort of cure in sight. And I think what we're going to find now, everybody's talking Main Street, everybody's talking Wall Street, nobody's talking K Street. The lobbyists are going to be, you know, working overtime tonight. They're going to try to pull some of those no votes and make them yes votes by, quote, tweaking the bill, which means, you know, giving a couple of goodies for people who are critics and getting them to go along with it and pointing to the drop today in the markets as a sign that if they don't act, you know, it's well and good to make a statement, but if they don't act, you're going to be hurting your constituents. So
now, what about the hurting the constituents? I mean, maybe it's fine for us to be saying, you know, politically this is wrong, and therefore we should not be unhappy that it dropped. But a lot of people are saying we are concerned about the market. We are invested in the market. Now, the reality is, I saw a report not long ago that only 36% of American workers actually have any savings at all in retirement accounts, which is to say an even smaller number are likely to be invested in these 401k mutual fund plans and so on. Nonetheless, you do have union pension plans invested. You've got a lot of regular folks wrapped up in this as well.
Yeah, no question. But most of those folks are not market players. They're not buying and selling. They're not playing games in the market. That's a relatively small group of people who want to move the market.
But don't they hurt, too, when 777 points go out of the market?
Of course they hurt, and they're very worried. And people have a right to be very worried. There's been such a, you know, tragic, scandalous, criminal mismanagement of our economy that's gone on now, you know, for a long time, but it's manifesting itself in a way that's sort of strange, because what's happened is we used to think maybe the workers may, you know, would overthrow capitalism. No, man, the capitalists are overthrowing capitalism. And this is like the first law of karma. What goes around comes around. And the people who are making money off of the misery of others are now miserable themselves. Their, you know, homes in the Hamptons are being foreclosed upon. You know, this is there's no shelter in this particular storm right now. And the hedge funds are in danger of losing, you know, their money. The credit debt swaps may be next. Credit card bubble may be next. In other words, this isn't over by a long shot. And that's why also this bailout, which was limited to buying up, quote, toxic waste mortgages that didn't have any value, that didn't really deal with the larger problems of debt in our society. And there's another great word that I learned in this past week. You like this one, Laura. OCM. OCM stands for other countries' money. You see, and part of the problem here is that we are dependent, you know, wannabe or not, on China and investors in Asia who have kept our, you know, deficit going up, you know, our $2 billion a day and putting money into the United States. When those people pull out or stop doing so, we're in trouble.
Danny Schechter's our guest. We'll take your calls when we come back. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. I'm sitting in for Mike. My name's Laura Flanders. The number is 800-989-1480. That's 800-989-1480. What do you think? Are you worried? If you were calling Congress this weekend, what were you saying? And now that you have a moment for a breather, what do you want to come out of Congress next? 800-989-1480. Danny Schechter is our guest. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show.
I do have one political disclosure.
All right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy with Danny Schechter, who has one political exposure he wants to make. Disclosure you want to make.
I read tonight on my email, I don't know if it's true or not, but this is Rosh Hashanah coming up here. Apparently, Michelle Obama's cousin is one of the black rabbis of Chicago. So Take that.
Interesting. Florida, are you listening? All right, we're talking about the bailout. You know, a lot of people out there freaking out. We're saying, don't freak out, people. This is a chance for Congress to take a pause and for us all to mark a moment. I think this is the week that the panic from the presidency didn't work. Chicken Little croaked. We were told the sky would fall if Congress didn't approve this package. So many people called Congress, so much dissatisfaction among the populace that Congress didn't go for this package. I don't believe it's all just politicking. I think people actually did know how unpopular their vote for this thing would be when they got home to their districts in November. The package went down. It went down by a relatively narrow vote with defections on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, in large number voting against. Not an obviously clear right, left, top down vote count. You can go through the vote call, the roll call. Some interesting people voted for it. Some interesting people voted for against it. What I think we have a moment here to do, and let me put that in a more simple way, what I think we have a chance to do right now is to rethink. If Reaganism, if Reaganomics was the shrink government, let the market do what it wants, rig the economy to help the very top and hope that it will trickle down, that's bust. And we have a chance to make something new up. Is it comfortable? No. Change isn't comfortable. Are there people hurting? Sure. Do all of us feel it when there's panic in Wall Street? Yeah, in part because we're all told to identify with Wall Street. Wall Street's up, our mood's supposed to rise. Wall Street's down, we're supposed to be in the doldrums. Do the changes on Wall Street affect us? Absolutely. But you know what? We've been on a crazy spiral, which has been less of a spiral than a spike, since the early years of the Reagan administration, because a few have been rising to the very top. The vast majority have been sinking lower and lower. We've been fed a bill of goods of individual accomplishment and to heck with everybody else. We have a chance now to say, 50 million people without health insurance is not all right. 250,000 foreclosures a month is not okay. The reality is you can't rule a society without any social values, and you can't strip away the safety net beneath a people and say that you still have a state. Danny, I don't know about you, but I think if we could resist the feeling of we're all going to die tomorrow, maybe we could figure out a better way to live.
You know, it's funny. I was on television last night. A Republican strategist was on, of course, predictably blaming everything on Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. So I went after him. I said, this is not just a partisan problem. This is a system thing. This is a corporate thing. This is something by people who give money to both parties, And what he said? To my surprise, he says, you're right. Okay. So I think that there is an opportunity now to sort of break down some of the lines that divide us, the polarization in our society, begin to talk to each other and figure out how we can help each other. I wrote this book, Plunder, as a way to try to contribute to a discourse, a discussion about all this. I don't feel like I have all the answers. I'm not just mouthing message points. I know that the system has been very rotten. It's been criminal. It's been wrong. But at the same time, there are a lot of good people who deserve, a job, B, an opportunity to invest in something and make a return. I'm not against all of that. The problem here is that a lot of the best instincts in people has been distorted and co-opted and appropriated. Example, subprime loans. It started as a reform. Mm-hmm. People who couldn't get credit, you pay a little bit more, and if you have some sort of background, we'll give you a new home so you can buy into the American dream. Sounds good. It's a reform. But it turned in the hands of people who are very unscrupulous and who are basically scammers into a crime. Mm. A crime against all of these families who got talked into and put into homes they couldn't afford. Of course, if somebody comes to you and says, Laura, wouldn't you like that home? Danny, I can't afford it. It's no way. oh, Laura, don't worry about it. I have this ninja loan. Ninja stands for no jobs,
no income,
no assets, you know. You'll do well. You know, and you say, well, is it okay? And you say, yeah, it's perfect. Everybody's doing it. Your cousin, I just sold him a house.
You know, I went to Miami, Danny, and we interviewed people who'd taken some of those loans, and they said it was that or being on the public housing waiting list for 14 years.
Exactly. What are the options that people have? What are the alternatives? I'm not into blaming the people, and I'm not into saying, well, irresponsible borrowers equals irresponsible lenders. Mrs. Jones, you know, in a depressed neighborhood in Phoenix equals the JPMorgan Chase. No, I'm sorry. One person is maybe operating out of desperation. Another person is operating out of calculation.
And the people who took the loan were only the very beginning of a process of bundling those loans into a commodified product that in itself, I think, spiraled out of control. It wasn't the original loan. It was the way those loans were turned into investment products for trading.
Securitization, exactly.
You know, we didn't get to any callers, and we've almost got to the top of the hour. Dan, will you stay just across the break, and we'll take some callers.
Sure.
They've been waiting for an age on the line. Let's very quickly go to Clarence in downtown L.A. just to get your voice out there because you've been waiting. Hi, Clarence. What's your question?
Oh, well, my question was, I told your screener, like Bob Dylan said, look out, kid, to keep it all hid. You know, they're draining so much money out of our society, 95% of these folks that can't make their mortgages, they pull into the gas pump regularly. And what it is, Hello?
You got about 20 seconds.
Muslims control the price of oil. Bush has been killing a bunch of Muslims in order to help Israel. And all that's doing is cursing Israel.
Well, you know, it really can make things simple if you've got a very, very clear, simple blame this one and blame that
prejudice
one approach.
Prejudice mind. I'm sorry.
Thanks,
Clarence. You don't get it right, man.
Yeah, try to think smarter, not simpler. All right, we'll be back with more after the break. You're listening to Mike Malloy's program. I'm Laura Flanders with Danny Schechter sitting in. We'll be back. Right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy, and that royal, regal-sounding music sounds like we're going to bring you the truth. Well, we're just going to give you our ideas on this interesting evening here in the United States. I say it's the day that Reaganomics died, the day that Chicken Little croaked, and the day that panic just didn't work because people are flat panicked out. Are many people feeling the pain of what's been happening on Wall Street, down 777 points today? Sure. But was the bailout package that died in the House this afternoon at 2 the right bailout package? It was not. The vote, 228 to 205, included a lot of no votes from both sides of the aisle. Some of those votes possibly motivated simply by resentment at the Democratic House leadership, but a lot more responding to a sense that come November, their constituents did not want them to be giving a no-strings-attached $700 billion bank check to one man, Henry Paulson. They didn't buy any longer the idea that you save those at the top and hope those at the bottom will save themselves. They didn't buy any longer that we had to rush, that we had to pass this package without the traditional committee meetings, that we could pass this package without the traditional, albeit usually lacking, oversight. They didn't buy it. And the deal went down. Are we happy? Are we celebrating like some would have you believe? No, we're not. We're not celebrating. We're in a crisis. What we're saying is that old, much overused cliche about crisis is the Chinese character for opportunity is true. We have an opportunity here to do something different. And I think we have an opportunity to do something short term to get us through the next 3 months. Then we have an opportunity to really work on some transformation that could bring about a shift in our ideology, our policy, our attitudes, our values, to re-embrace the public, to re-embrace long-term investment strategies, sustained stimulus, caring about one another. What about a single-payer health care plan? That would stimulate the economy. That would help 50 million people without health insurance, and it would help a whole lot of employers who are hurting in the pocketbook for paying insurance to their employees. What about big thinking with a lot of big goals in mind? That's what we have the chance to do right now, and I think we have a chance to make this election of November an election about change after all. In this hour, we're going to be talking about the challenges we may, many of us, face at the polls when we go to vote, what is already happening in that critical swing state of Ohio where so many nefarious things went down in 2004. Well, the GOP is at it again, trying to stop early voting, which begins this week. If you're in Ohio, you can register and vote same day, no lines, starting this week. The deadline for registrations in many states closes October 6th. This is a critical week. Mark Crispin Miller, the author of Loser Take All, Election Fraud and Subversion of Democracy 2000 to 2008, is going to be joining us in just a bit. But we're going to take a few calls. My guest from the last hour, Danny Schechter, author of Plunder, is with me. We're going to take a few calls. Danny, give people a website they can go to find your work.
Newsdissector.com/plunder, capital P, is about my book. Mediachannel.org is the site that I edit, which is a media issues network. I write a blog every day as the News Dissector, the News Dissector blog. And I made a movie called In Debt We Trust, indebtwetrust.com. There's a lot of places to find me online. You can Google me. But the main point here is we all have to educate ourselves about these issues because we're not getting the information we need and deserve from our media. Programs like this are absolutely vital to try to keep our democracy alive and going. And that's why I'm here tonight. I'm hoping that folks might be interested in what I have to say. Plunder is available at Amazon.com. But beyond that, the challenge that we have and will have is how do we survive in what could become not just a recession, but for many is already a depression, and it's certainly depressing.
Let's take a call from Charlene near Phoenix, I think, listening on KPHX. Hi, Charlene.
Hi, Laura. I just wanted to tell you that all 8 of our representatives from Arizona voted against this bill today, and I've been on the computer sending them a little 4-sentence note thanking them for their no vote.
All right. Now, why was this an important thing to you, Charlene? Why were you happy they voted the way they did?
Because I thought the whole thing was railroaded by the Bush administration. I don't think it has a lot of forethought in it, and I don't think it has any expertise in it. You know, there was that letter that was sent to the Bush administration by, what was it, like 300 economic professors,
that's
well-known
right.
People saying, don't do this. This is not the way to do it.
You weren't
I think
persuaded.
We need a commission of those people.
You weren't persuaded by that 3-page memo that Henry Paulson circulated in which he said he didn't want to have any judicial review or any accountability.
And then when he got on the TV this afternoon, he sounded like he's been hanging around with Bush too long. He sounded like a babbling idiot also.
Charlene, thanks for your call. Your line's breaking up, but it's great to hear from you, and I'm glad you are exercising the democratic rights you've got to call your congresspeople or write them and thank them. Let's get Sue from Long Beach on the line, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Sue, how are you?
All right, so far. I think I'm all for punishing the guilty. However, the innocent are getting hurt, too. We have trickle-down for losses, although we don't have trickle-down for profits. We have layoffs. We have people not buying what other people are selling, a whole chain reaction or downward spiral. I do believe there's a problem. I do believe the basics of the bill that was proposed would help. I know there's some progressive things I'd like to see added, more help for the homeowner and other things like that. I know the right has some things they'd like added. I hope we can pass a plain vanilla stimulus bill, and I would call this a stimulus, not a bailout. Nobody
it wasn't stimulating anybody except the bankers and the brokers at the top.
If the bankers and the brokers suffer, credit tightens up, the housing market gets worse, more layoffs, businesses can't borrow, farmers can't borrow. But I'd like to see those progressive measures passed. However, I think we can have that debate for the next couple of months or 4 months and educate the public on what's needed.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Congress will be more progressive. But
all right,
in the meantime,
Sue. Thanks. I think you're absolutely on the right track, on particularly on the slowdown. Let's think. Let's talk about it. Let's get educated. Let me ask you about this credit tightens question, Danny. You know, who does the tightening of the credit? I mean, either the banks are lending money, which is their business, or they're not. And if they're not doing their business, which is lending money, shouldn't they be taken over or declared a disaster?
Well, understand something. First of all, because of 7 rate cuts by the Federal Reserve Bank, money became much cheaper for banks. So they were buying money basically at 2%, and they were reselling it to us for 4.25 or something like that in terms of loans. So there was a spread there, and they were doing, you know, well with that spread. We were subsidizing the banks. The problem is they had so many investments in these subprime loans. They were so exposed. They dribbled out the information. They wrote it down a little at a time. They never really came clean. They never really essentially were accountable for what they did and the deals that went down, the money that they made. So, you know, they were using that money to pay off or pay down some of these other losses that they had, and it became sort of increasingly untenable for them to do so. You know, Franklin Roosevelt, who's been mentioned here tonight, the New Deal and all, he had a word for bankers. He called them banksters. Banksters because they were, in a sense, gangsters with a B. And, you know, we can't allow banksters to write their own rules. When I leave the studio here tonight, I go out on beautiful 6th Avenue in Manhattan, and guess what? There's a red light or a green light and tells me I can go or not. We need red lights. We need to be able to have some rules of the road here, and these people manage to scuttle all of those roads, those rules. And guess who got hurt by them doing it? Mm-hmm. They got what they wanted, and now and many of them are out of business. Mm-hmm. So they don't necessarily know their best interest themselves.
All right, Danny, thanks so much. People can get more at newsdissector.com/plunder if they want to find out about the book Plunder. The DVD is available, In Debt We Trust. Not a bad thing to play in your neighborhood. Get the conversation going. Use this time to educate yourself. Do it. And in the meantime, during the break, call us 800-989-1480, 1-800-989-1480. Ain't nobody celebrating around here. We're just taking a breath. 800-989-1480. When we come back, we'll be talking about voting. Are we going to be able to cast our vote and have our vote count as cast? We'll hear from Mark Crispin Miller when we come back. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Novem Radio, Mike Malloy's program. Mike's taking a little break. The number is 800-989-1480. That's a kind of contradiction in terms. Can you imagine Mike Malloy taking a break? What does he do? Does he take a cruise? His feet are up on a desk somewhere? Gets a massage? It's just all very hard to visualize. 800-989-1480. Well, you had another interesting little episode for Tina Fey to go for this evening. The McCain campaign did its second damage control interview in a row with Katie Couric. This one attempting to sort of staunch the bleeding or the guffawing from Sarah Palin contradicting McCain on Pakistan by claiming that answering a voter's question is gotcha journalism. You can find the clip from CBS on YouTube. It's really crazy. I mean, Palin called the president of Pakistan Zardari. McCain swoops in to intercept a question asked directly of Palin. Palin. They're busily trying to protect this woman, even as they're getting us all excited for her debate on Thursday. McCain, Zardari, Zamari, Sunnis, Shiites, Pakistan borders, what again? This should be a pretty interesting debate if we're bringing McCain, who can't get his Sunnis and his Shiites straight, in to correct Palin. And, hey, we've got a whole lot more laughing by Tina Fey to have before the election of November. We're going to talk about that election next, because for all of the light stuff that might be out there and the fun it is to laugh at some of these characters, we've got a very serious question ahead. And that question is, when it comes to November, do our votes actually count? Will they be counted as we cast them? And in this country that claims to be a democracy, it's actually a republic, will all those people who want to cast a vote and who have quote-unquote qualified, frankly, I think when you reach 18 you should qualify, but we don't go for that in this country, will every qualified voter be able to be heard? You may not have the choices that you want, but do you get to make any kind of a choice? We're going to talk next with Mark Crispin Miller. He's the author of Loser Take All, Election Fraud and Subversion of Democracy 2000-2008. He's been following this stuff for a very long time. Mark, welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us.
Great to be with you again.
You know, it's such a big, daunting subject. This is a crazy country, right? We call ourselves a democracy. We have no federal right to vote. We have voting overseen by tens of thousands of different authorities in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of counties and districts, different regulations in every state, mass confusion. So you've got an election like this one where we've got more people excited than ever. Well, in our lifetime, probably a bigger increase of people engaged. You've got the officials, the federal voting officials, such as they are, saying, well, if you tally it all up, we're probably going to have two-thirds of voters voting either for the first time or on new machines. But don't worry, it's all going to be fine when it hasn't been fine for the last 8 years, as you document in your book. What are you watching? What's your priority concern right now?
Well, there's two things. One is vote suppression, which involves a dizzying range of tricks and tactics meant to shrink the size of the electorate so that the number of people who can actually get into vote on election day will be much smaller than it should be. Many of those tricks and tactics are now legal. Many of them will be criminal. Okay, they'll be illegal. But beyond that whole set of hurdles to people, you know, trying to get into the polling booth, there's also the fact of electronic manipulation of the vote totals, which is election fraud. So there's vote suppression and election fraud.
So if you're a Republican tonight and you're looking at a McCain-Palin team that can't seem to shoot straight in public and in private, are just messing up around key issues like this bailout. I think it was this very time last week that John McCain was saying the economy was fundamentally sound. He's wised up a bit since, but this is the guy who yesterday declared that he had gone to Washington and pieced together a great bailout package. Today, it obviously didn't exist. If you're them and you are looking at your little team of limping comrades here up against the Obama crew, who, whatever you may think, are enthusiastic, excited, well-organized, well-networked, motivated, massive turnout of African-Americans expected in every state, I would imagine you'd start doing your best to suppress whatever the heck you could.
Well, here's the thing. When you say Republican, you have to define what you mean, right? Because the Republican Party now is a fringe party. It's a crackpot party because the Christian Coalition disappeared into the Republican Party starting in the early 90s and took it over. The people we saw at the convention, the people who were so, going hog wild over Sarah Palin, are people who for whom that is a dream ticket, which is a way of saying that they don't actually care about the majority of votes. See, it's a mistake to think that the McPallen team is actually in earnest attempting to get a lot of people to vote for them. I mean, clearly, if McCain wanted to get independents and undecideds to vote for him, he wouldn't have picked Sarah Palin, right? So it's something else that they have up their sleeve.
He's going to do it with smarts and a small cohort that is very effective on the ground. We'll talk more about it when we come back. Mark Crispin Miller is our guest. The number is 800-989-1480. Do you know where your registration is tonight? Do you know where you're voting tonight? Do you know that there's early voting beginning in states like Ohio and Nebraska almost about as we speak? We'll talk more about it when we come back. Nevada, too, I think. I'm Laura Flanders. This is the Mike Molloy Program. We're back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Molloy. The number to call in is 800-989-1480. That's 989-1480. It's a toll-free call. We'll pick up the dime or the quarter or whatever it is now with inflation. If you want to find out more about me, you can either go to my website, lauraflanders.com, or check out the new internet and cable and satellite TV show I've got going Monday through Thursday. If you're a Dish Network subscriber, you can find us at channel 9415 four times a day there on Free Speech TV, directly after the hit program Democracy Now. You can also find us online at grittv.org, grittv.org, where we regularly bat about the key questions of the day with a great panel of in-studio guests. Then we get the best video of the web, grassroots groups, community organizations, poets, performers, you name it. How-tos, gotcha journalism, we'll run it all on Grit TV. Send us a link and we'll take a look. Maybe it'll get on the air. GritTV.org. Well, we're talking about this moment that we're in. And I gave a big pitch at the beginning of this program for taking the time to go slow enough in responding to the economic crisis that we actually could put some real transformation into works. A transformation, perhaps, of values, of policy priorities, of attitudes. And I said, let's make this election in November, an election about change after all. Maybe Barack Obama doesn't bring us all the change we want, but it's an opportunity to push, perhaps, in the way that people pushed Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and a relatively moderate guy ended up bringing us the New Deal pushed by a movement. Now, all of this resides on the fact that we believe that come November we will be able, as people in this country, to cast a vote, have that vote counted in the way that we cast it, and make the kind of change that you look at the polls today, it seems this country wants to make. But Mark Crispin Miller, our guest in the studio, says not so fast. Remember 2000? Remember 2004? Remember 2006? We haven't had an election that could be called fair and free yet this century, and 2008 is probably not going to be any different. Mark Crispin Miller is the author of Loser Take All, Election Fraud and Subversion of Democracy 2000 to 2008. Mark, right before the break, we were rushing before we went into the commercials, and you were talking about why John McCain picked Palin. And it's a big question. This is the week of the vice presidential debate. A lot of us will still be wiping the tears off our cheeks from watching the Saturday Night Live Tina Fey skit from last week by the time she comes up on the screen on Thursday and probably gives Fey more ammunition. There are a lot of us wondering, what the heck was this pick about? But you've got an idea.
Yeah, I think that the McCain team picked Palin. Let me be more precise. I think that Karl Rove, who is running that campaign, picked Palin because they want to lay the groundwork for a rationale to explain McCain's win on Election Day. Okay, I'm putting win in quotation marks. They need a rationale to explain his win, see, which would otherwise be completely inexplicable.
So like in 2004 when we were told, well, John Kerry was ahead of the polls, and ahead in all the exit polls until the very last minute, but the very last minute it switched, and we were told the next day it was the values voters.
The values voters, right. It was these multitudes of fervent Christianists just materialized out of nowhere at the end of the day, darkening the horizon, right? Multiplying like Jesus' loaves and fishes, they crowded into the polling places all over the country and in southern Ohio, and they decided it for Bush and Cheney. Now, there had to be a narrative, or I should say a myth like this, because Bush Cheney's victory was otherwise completely inexplicable. I mean, they had disapproval ratings in the mid to high 40s. Their own party wasn't behind them. 60 newspapers in red states that had endorsed them in 2000 now came out against them. So there had to be a story, a seemingly credible story to account for this sudden victory, and it was that the Christians turned out. The fact is, Laura, there was not a shred of evidence to support that story, not a shred. And we find out, although we knew it at the time, that the story itself originated with the Christian right. It was a talking point by people like Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, saying that it was the issue of gay marriage, you know, in particular, that sent a majority to the polls to defeat Kerry Edwards.
Even in those very even as those very same polls that brought us the buff about values voters revealed that, in fact, 61% of people in this country, or those that were polled, believe there should be some sort of legal recognition for gay families. It was clearly not a priority.
Well, I can give you an even more dramatic statistic. You know, Pew does an exhaustive poll after every election, and in their post-election poll in 2004, they asked people, what made you vote the way you did? The number of people who said moral values was 9%. The number of people who said gay marriage was 3%. So this is simply one piece of evidence among many.
I almost take offense at the moral values thing being equated in the way that it normally is in the media with radical right, this or that, because I have moral values. I'm against the war. We should feed the poor. We should have health care for everybody.
Well, actually, Zogby did a poll that broke down moral values in precisely the way you're saying, because for a number of people, moral values means, you know, kindness and, you know,
fun.
Sermon on the Mount.
We're quirky that way.
Yeah, right, exactly. But the point is that I think that the dramatic and I believe ill-advised choice of Sarah Palin was driven by the desire for that narrative to be recycled on this election.
Now, you said that Karl Rove is running the campaign. I don't want to let you get away with that in the sense that officially he's not running it. Officially he's spending more time with his family.
Yeah, officially. And he's also a Fox News commentator who's ostensibly giving us impartial analyses.
Fair and balanced.
He even had the gall not long ago to attack one of McCain's ads for all the lies in it. You know, Karl Rove gives new meaning to the word slick. You know what I'm saying? He would just as soon lie as breathe. You know what I mean? But Alternate ran a piece basically, you know, reporting that Karl Rove is running the campaign. His surrogates are the officially in charge of the campaign. He's actually calling the shots. And therefore, there's something just bubbling below the surface of the news now that I want to tell your listeners about, because it's crucially important.
Has to do with a GOP cybersecurity expert with an interesting name, Stephen Spoonamore.
That's right. Stephen Spoonamore. Stephen Spoonamore is, there's three things about him that make him, I believe, an unimpeachable whistleblower. One is he's a conservative Republican with a military background. The second is that he was formerly a McCain supporter. In fact, he was an Ohio delegate for McCain. He has since completely given up on the McCain team because he's seen what they're actually up to. And third, he is a prominent and very respected and successful expert on the detection of computer fraud. That's his profession. He works for the banking industry. He works for the Secret Service. He works for the Chinese government. His business is to figure out how people pull scams by computer. That's what he does. Well, for the last couple of years, this guy's been blowing the whistle. And lately, he has come out with some really stunning revelations. And he's in a position to make them. He has documentary evidence for them. He has identified Karl Rove's computer guru, the guy who, to whom Rove would say, Florida, 2000, do it. Ohio, 2004, do it. There's evidence suggesting that Connell had a great deal to do with the theft of Don Siegelman's reelection for governor in Alabama in 2002. There's some evidence suggesting that he had something to do with the theft of Max Cleland's reelection to the Senate in Georgia in 2002. The lawyers in this case that I'm about to describe call this guy, this Mike Connell is his name, a high IQ Forrest Gump because he's been on the scene of every dubious election of the last 7 years. Mike Connell is a fervent Catholic and a radical pro-lifer. And he told Spoonamore that he has helped the Bush team steal elections to save the babies. Okay? Spoonamore has identified him. He knows him. He has worked with him. Now, Spoonamore's testimony is driving a new RICO lawsuit in Ohio, under Ohio, the Ohio RICO statute, the racketeering statute. It is based on, you know, a lawsuit that was brought in Ohio right after the 2004 election. This is a civil action, okay? It is all about the Bush machine's systematic election fraud since 2000 and lasting up into the present. Mm. Spoonamore is the star witness, the expert witness in this lawsuit.
Okay? When will the lawsuit be heard?
Well, there was just a big legal breakthrough in the case. They have now subpoenaed Mike Connell and ordered him to be deposed. The point of this lawsuit, and this is what makes it so incredibly important, the point of this lawsuit is to get depositions from all the top perpetrators of the Bush machine's election fraud over the last 8 years. They have subpoenaed Connell. They plan to subpoena Rove, okay, and others. And I'll give more information about where people can go after the break.
I was going to say, there's a role that people, we the people, can play in all of this. Mark Crispin Miller has a whole lot more information at his website. If you go to markcrispinmiller.blogspot.com or look up News from Underground. But he's not going anywhere yet. We'll be back. We'll take some of your questions and tell you how you can get involved. Also want to remind you, early voting begins this week in many states. I want to hear about your experience. 800-989-1480. We'll be back in just a bit. Hey, who are they calling a lunatic out there? This is Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. I'm not in your head, I'm just in your ear maybe this evening for a few hours while Mike's away. We're talking about the question of voting integrity, rights, fraud, suppression. Will this election get stolen? Doesn't look like the GOP can win it any other way. With me here in the studio, Mark Crispin Miller. He's the author of Loser Take All, Election Fraud and Subversion of Democracy 2000 to 2008. He was just the keynoter at a conference in Columbus. He was in Cincinnati. He's been all over Ohio this week. Why? Well, because Ohio has what's called Golden Week. And starting, I think, tomorrow, you can vote and register all in the same day. Mark doesn't sound too excited about that, but hey, it does avoid the long lines.
Well, I have my doubts about early voting because I think that the higher the turnout on Election Day, you know, the more dramatic and over the top the turnout is, the harder it is to argue that, oh, the students, you know, they were all talk, but they turned out to be apathetic. That's what they said in 2004 about Rock the Vote. It was a big failure. It's so cynical because the turnout was actually quite high, but they managed to block the student vote just as they blocked the African-American vote and they blocked the Hispanic vote.
You actually saw a bigger increase among younger voters than any other demographic.
That's right. The turnout is always considerably higher than we think because so many people are variously knocked off the rolls. So
I'm always impressed how many people do vote, given how difficult it is.
Oh, yeah. It matters. It matters to people. They really care about this. They're not apathetic. But anyway,
you were talking about a case that is being brought by a whistleblower with enough evidence to bring a suit, which is impressive, to investigate plan to steal the 08 election.
Okay.
What can people do? I know I've just completely oversimplified, but what can people do if they want to just put this spanner in the works here, this stick in the stove?
The crucial thing is for us to shed a very bright light on the ongoing plans to steal this election. This is an enterprise that's being managed by the same perpetrators who've pulled off the thefts of our last several elections, Karl Rove among them. I mentioned this guy Mike Connell. There's others. There's a guy named Jeff Averback, who is the head of a company called Smart Tech. He's also the head of an evangelical publishing house. You know, this is a really dedicated group of anti-democratic operatives and activists. And the point here is to turn up the heat on them, shine a light on them, and thereby kind of immobilize them so they have to pull in their horns and get lawyered up and basically not do what they're planning to do on November 4th.
A lawsuit could do it and we could help?
Well, these civil depositions could certainly do it, and we can help. Just today, there were stories broken about the latest developments in this case. On a raw story, Larissa Alexandrov did a great piece. Brad Friedman on bradblog.com, he did a great piece.
Brad will be here on Wednesday through Friday, I believe, sitting in for Mike.
The thing is, if anyone wants to get up to speed on what Spoonamore has been saying, there's a staggering new video interview with him. It just went up yesterday. They should go to a website that's run by Velvet Revolution. Velvet Revolution is the nonprofit that's fundraising for this case. The website address is www.rovecybergate.com. That's rovecybergate.com. Now, crucially, if you go to that site, you can not only get up to speed on this amazing case, because, Laura, I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what Spoonamore has revealed here, but you can also donate. And they definitely need a war chest, because I can report to you that Connell, who had been willing, you know, kind of ambivalently willing to talk, in fact, he made himself available to Conyers people, is now stonewalling like crazy. He's got three lawyers fighting like mad to try to get out of this civil deposition. They're having a hard time doing it. But the word is that Rove has threatened Connell's wife, Heather, with some kind of Department of Justice investigation of her lobbying activities. I mean,
that's exactly what happened to several of the justices that were intimidated and to Don Siegelman from Alabama.
Exactly. You know, the fact that Karl Rove could use the Department of Justice as a cudgel in a private political fight is just stunning to me. Mm. The fact is that, as the lawyers in this case say, this is Cliff Arnebeck and Bob Vitrakis in Ohio, this is actually the biggest scandal in American history. It is vast. It has everything to do with the U.S. attorney scandal, which was all about, you know, firing those attorneys who would not bring bogus charges of voter fraud against Democrats. It has everything to do with Jack Abramoff, whose fundraising, whose scandal-ridden, you know, money laundering was all about providing the capital for stealing elections. And incidentally, Abramoff has indicated that he's willing to talk and help with this investigation. I mean, this is a big, big deal. Mm. So people should definitely look into this, because the fact is that the McCain campaign does plan to steal it. As you said a moment ago, there is no other way they could win in an economic climate like this, with one of the worst candidates, I mean, I think anybody has ever seen, and a running mate who's not just a joke, but an absolutely flat-out extremist lunatic. I mean, the mainstream press hasn't done anywhere near enough in talking about her background.
We're going to talk more about that tomorrow night here on this program. I'll be sitting in for Mike again, and Michelle Goldberg will join us. She just came back from Alaska, where she's really been tracking the roots of Palin in the religious right. We'll also hear from John Nichols, who's interestingly looking at the role of the Rove Bush cohort in Alaska. You got two sets of people who don't care much about constitutional law, the Armageddonists, who believe God's law rules, and the we only guys from the Bush crime family, as Mike Malloy would call them. They make a perfect couple. They make a perfect team. Sarah Palin's their candidate. And as you said, she does provide something of a storyline for people who want some weird and inexplicable explanation for a strange result this November. Mark, thank you so much for your work. We really appreciate it. Mark also teaches at NYU. You can find more information if you check out markcrispinmiller.blogspot.com or News from Underground. You'll find his website. When we come back, we'll take your calls, and then I think we may get from Counterpunch Alexander Coben joining us before the end of the night. It's been an interesting night here at Mike Malloy's program. I'm so glad to be here with you. The number is 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Top of the hour coming up. We'll be back after the news. Mellow, dreamy, late in the evening music here on Nova M. This is Laura Flanders sitting in for Mike Malloy. Eh, what the heck? Give us a call, 800-989-1480. These are crazy times, aren't they? But no time to go crazy. Get that right. You can find out more about me and my TV program at grittv.org. That's GRITTV.org. Grit. It is that stuff, that metal that makes it possible to take on the tough challenges. Also, that pesky, impervious matter that gets in your shoe and blisters your foot. I think of it as the stuff that inspires and the stuff that makes a whole lot of the establishment uncomfortable. Grit TV. Check us out. I think you'll enjoy it. We're on cable. We're on satellite TV. We're coming on to public television stations around the country. And, of course, we're online at grittv.org. We stream live every day. Noon. You can call in with your calls and your comments. I'd love to have any Mike Malloy listener is a viewer friend of mine. You can call for this program 800-989-1480, as many people have. We've talked about the so-called bailout, really the old power to Paulson plan. We've talked about the early voting and the challenges to election integrity that have been being followed by Mark Crispin Miller. We've talked a little bit, not much, about the prospects for real unrest in the country in the next few weeks between now and the November vote. I wonder sometimes, I was in St. Paul, I looked at how the police treated protesters there. I wonder, were they in rehearsal for something? They sure looked like it. I heard just now from Mark Crispin Miller that the 1st Brigade Combat Team, 3rd Division, is back in the United States, apparently charged with, having spent months in Iraq, charged with policing, community control, social unrest, and, well, yeah, dissent. Maybe if what you saw in St. Paul is anything to go by, we have a lot more coming up, because the protests in some parts of this country are not getting smaller, they're getting bigger. There have been protests just about every day outside Wall Street, or close to it, for the last week, really, here in New York. Protests all across the country in opposition to this bailout plan. I wonder what we're going to see in the weeks and months ahead. These are times, I would say, to connect with your friends and relations, family of choice, family of not so much choice. These are times to remember what we actually believe in before the "we must bail out Wall Street" gods got into our heads. Those voices get summoned by the media. Wall Street must go up, because otherwise we go down. These are times to remember what we actually care about. Each other, healthcare, community, sustainable societies, neighborhoods that function, stores on your block, bankers you can talk to. Jobs that don't make you sick. Hours that don't make you want to kill yourself. I think we've got a chance to make some changes right about now. And I think we've got some politicians running scared in Washington. The president, the leadership, both the candidates really told us we had to go for this bailout package, so-called. The people didn't go for it. The package went down. Why was that? I think because the people have pretty much had it. It's hard to terrify people to death when they're already living with the roofs falling in and the water rising outside in their streets. It's hard to terrify people that trouble is ahead, when they're living in it. 800-989-1480 is the number to call. A lot of people on the line. Hey, Michael in the Bronx, haven't heard from you for a long time. How are you doing? Michael in the Bronx, welcome.
Hey, Laura, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. So this is where you hang out.
I just have to be surfing the net, and then I was wondering what's going on with Mike Malloy show, and then I hear your friendly voice. Well, you know something? This economic bailout, this is one of the many reasons why Barack Obama won that debate on Friday by so many polls, because he had won if there wasn't any government oversight, if there was no checks and balances. Practically everything Barack Obama said, he has called it right, and John McCain has gotten it wrong. John McCain keeps flip-flopping. John McCain is just about clueless, as well as Sarah Palin. And, you know, rather than getting upset and getting my blood pressure up, you know, when I talk to people, I tell them that the way I would describe John McCain and Sarah Palin's performances thus far, and I'm directing Sarah Palin's interview with Katie Couric. It's funny, Laura, you mentioned YouTube, because guess what? YouTube also has a sound clip from the game show The Price is Right, which I find as the best description of McCain and Palin. Quite frankly, it goes as such.
You know, Mike, one of the right, Michael. We got it. I think we all heard it in the recesses of our brain. Micah, come back.
Yes,
you know, that wouldn't be a bad theme tune, would it? You know, the interesting thing this afternoon has been to watch John McCain, who came to Washington yesterday to say that he was going to take, he came to Washington last week, and he made a big deal of being there again over the weekend. In fact, as far as I can see, on Saturday night when the big negotiations were going down, he was having dinner in a fancy restaurant with Joe Lieberman and his buds. But nonetheless, you know, he made a big ploy for having taken leadership, and then he came out. His leadership was all wrong, of course. And then he came out today and said, well, it just shows what a leader he is. I think you're right that Barack Obama has scored some points through being seemingly kind of above the fray and relatively calm. On the other hand, I would have liked to have seen him pushing for more of the kinds of reforms that some of the more progressive Democrats were trying to get into this bill. Do you think that's what he'll do next?
I would hope so, but one thing I am concerned is that I think it's this Thursday, is the vice presidential debate between Biden and Palin. Two things I would like to see happen. First off, if anyone, and I'm saying this just in case anybody from the Obama camp is listening, somebody needs to make very clear that just because Sarah Palin is a female, she does not deserve any special privileges or any preferential treatment. This debate is about the issues, and it also goes on credibility. And I, for one, am sick and tired of Palin going on this campaign dictating to people and refusing to take questions. You know, people want to know about this and that.
Yeah, somebody asked her a question.
Stand up to it.
Somebody asked her a question. She calls it gotcha journalism, even when it comes from somebody in the audience. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Michael. Let's go to Joan. Joan in Charlotte. How are you doing, Joan? I'm sorry, John. John in Charlotte. A little gender bending going on there. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm a first-time caller, but one thing I just kind of wanted to point out, and I listen to a lot of talk radio, both conservative and progressive, and I guess the thing that kind of surprises me is how much each camp always blames the other one for all the problems of it's all their fault. Mm-hmm. And what amazes me, as you research, and actually, you know, I always kind of consider myself an independent, so I'm the most dangerous person in the world as a voter because I can actually think. But I'll give you a certain example that they both blame each other.
Mm-hmm.
Outsourcing of America, you know, there's no more jobs. You'll hear McCain say that, you know, it's all because of the Democrats, the jobs are gone. And then you listen to, you know, Democrats to say it's all because of the Republicans. And if you go back in time, go back to 92 when, you know, the nutball Ross Perot was running and they were debating NAFTA. And both Republicans and Democrats voted for it. And if you remember Ross, what did Ross say? You know, he was kind of nuts. No one liked to listen to him. He was a smart man. He said what? You know, if they pass it, there'll be a big sucking sound out of this country of jobs, which is exactly what happened. And now you look at the financial crisis we're in. Republicans blame the Democrats. Democrats blame the Republicans.
No, but you know what? Just to get you off your lecture there for a minute, John, I mean, the interesting thing about what happened today in Congress is that it really wasn't this one blaming that one. Maybe they did that, but both parties saw major defections in their ranks away from this proposal. It's an interesting thing to see such a sort of nonpartisan split tonight across all sorts of lines. You had Barbara Lee voting one way, I think, and Maxine Waters voting another. You had progressives on one side of this, more conservatives on the other. A fascinating vote in the run-up to an election. This wasn't the kind of party-line ideological divide that you'd expect. What I think it was a lot of looking around over the shoulder, looking towards November, and hearing it from their constituents. So this is, to me, a moment where, you know, it wasn't so much right versus left as bottom versus top that won out.
Well, but, you know, the one thing I would point out is that they're looking over their shoulder because I think the American people are kind of getting a little annoyed at bailing everyone out.
Absolutely,
I mean,
right.
The middle class. And the thing is, and this may offend some, but, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of getting sick and tired of it's never, ever anybody's fault. You know, you look at the, you know, people who, you know, for example, you get a woman pregnant, don't want to take care of her. Well, don't worry about it. The government will take care of her.
Oh, I don't know. We've had to play a lot. We've had a lot of lecturing on personal responsibility. I think what we saw this evening was a lot of people saying, you know what, you take some personal responsibility, you bankers, you Henry Paulson, stop lecturing the rest of us. When we come back, we're going to welcome a good, somebody you know, I bet, from counterpunch.org. It's the newsletter online, edited by, among others, Alexander Coburn. He's going to join us after the break. We are Nova M Radio. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. The number is 800-989-1480. We'll be right back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. The number is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. They are hand-wringing. They are hand-wringing. You got to get those Republicans to shift. You've got an all-out campaign to get a new version of this package back in Congress before the end of the week. There's a little hiatus with the Rosh Hashanah holiday, but that's what it's all about these next few days. If you listen to some quarters, if you listen to elsewhere, that's not what this is about. This is a moment to pause. This is a moment to figure out some kind of a plan that actually would represent a change, an actual reorganization of some priorities, and maybe some reconsideration of who we are as a people and as a state. To bring to that, to open up that can of worms and talk about what we could be doing at this moment, hand-wringing or celebrate or maybe somewhere in between, I'm bringing on the phone right now Alexander Coburn from counterpunch.org. If you don't know Counterpunch, you should. It's one of the best newsletters on the web, and you can also get a print version if you subscribe. Alexander, welcome.
Glad to be with you, my dear.
So it seems like those are the options we're being offered, you know, hand-wring or celebrate. Where do you find yourself tonight?
Well, celebrate, obviously. It's wonderful. Absolutely a day of fantastic rejoicing. America is, I think, more united. You know, we've listened to Mr. Obama talking about the divisions, America divided. Here is America, as far as I can see, 99.9% united.
That's certainly how the calls were going into Congress this week.
I think so. And they're saying, don't give them the money. And they didn't. The Republicans said no. And what, 90-plus Democrats said no? And there it is. It's a wonderful victory for the people versus the bankers.
I said this was,
the left
I said,
has no idea how to celebrate victory.
I said this was the week that panic didn't work and Chicken Little croaked. The question is now, what do we do next?
Well, you then have to say, well, what's happened for the last 30 years? The philosophy of neoliberalism, which has been backed by the New York Times, by all the press, by all the politicians, by the Democratic, the DLC, by, every university economics department in the country, has finally rotted out. It's gone. So what do? We say, well, that's the wrong path. It's destroyed or threatens to destroy the very system you profess to believe in. So then we have to produce something new. We have to say there has to be popular control, there has to be control of the distribution of money, there has to be control of the allocation of credit, there has to be control of finances of this country. Now, the Congress is obviously not up to this task, but the task of the left, and I think we've been running really good stuff on the counterpunch site by Michael Hudson, mm-hmm. who was the economic advisor to the Kucinich campaign, putting up really good ideas. This is probably one of the most potentially exciting and creative moments for a refashioning of the American, the way we do things that I can remember.
So you've got the end of Reaganomics, which is more than that.
Flushed down the toilet of history.
And now an opportunity for transformation. Now, in the old sort of FDR days, it was about relief, reform, and reconstruction. Can we do more than that?
Of course we can, because relief... You know, each time, crisis is not alien to capitalism. It's integral to it. A very angry German in the 19th century pointed that out, whose initials are KM. I'll leave your listeners to figure out who that was.
I don't think you're allowed to mention that name on radio.
We can't mention it. No. But, it's a four-letter word.
Ending in X.
Ending in X. That's all we'll say. But you have to figure out a real plan. Now, I don't know what Labour's really saying. Where are the labor unions in this? What were they doing? What were they recommending for their membership? This is an incredible opportunity because you have the Republicans who obviously, very often for opportunistic reasons, but also because they have some utterly insane belief in that the free market, if left undisturbed, will work, which it won't, which 1929 really proved, plus the Democrats, 5 of them or something?
95,
who said no. With some very curious people who didn't say no, which you probably will abuse in your seditious program at some of the point, who have to produce the plan. Now, what did Obama say? Obama, I think his message of bipartisanship and hope has to adjust to the real reality, which is a consensus of the American people that he was ludicrous.
All right, hold it right there.
A consensus against... What?
Alexander, can you take a bite to eat and come back and join us in 6 minutes?
I don't know. That's a very difficult question. Probably
He's
not.
He's going to leave us on tenterhooks here. Let's see how
leave you on tenterhooks.
We will be back. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Program.
Richie, too.
Right, we're back. I'm Laura Flanders. Well, if you want to find out more about what Alexander Coben has to say, you can find him at counterpunch.org. I'm going to take your calls for the rest of the hour here this evening, and I'll be back tomorrow. Again, if you want more information about Grit TV, just check it out, grittv.org. That's the TV Now program that I host on cable, satellite, public TV, online. Check it out, grittv.org. You can also call in noon, live, noon, Eastern, 9 a.m. West Coast, while we're doing the central part of the program. You can call in, comment, etc. The Backbone Campaign sent me an email. They are continuing with protests over the next few days, not sitting down with any kind of confidence that there won't be a revival of this bailout package. I bet there will. I bet there'll be a moment of pausing right now, and that the Republicans will whip their folks into shape, and they'll try to pass a similar bill or a bill with just a few tweaks around about Thursday. So the Backbone people are among those who are saying this is no time to get quiet. You need to continue sending your letters to Congress. They have at their website, and boy, I guess the website is just backbonecampaign.org. They're the people that go through the streets with a backbone in papier-mâché or something to applaud those members of Congress that have one and deride those that don't. They have a handy-dandy tool at their website that enables you to send a letter to Congress. They're calling for all sorts of things. They're calling for, well, they support that Tobin tax idea on all transactions in finance, insurance, and real estate. Let's have a tax that could go into the Treasury, provide some funds to, among other things, I don't know, help homeowners in trouble, you name it. Fund some of the regulation and oversight that we'd like to see more of. They're calling for a 5-year moratorium on foreclosures and a bailout of homeowners equal to any bailout of bankers. And they're calling for, well, if $700 billion is going to be given away, let's have a $700 billion investment in green energy jobs immediately to be paid for by a tax on carbon emissions. All this kind of stuff. They're proposing something called an Honest Emergency Economic Stabilization Act. Try it. You can find out more information at backbonecampaign.org. They're asking the question, who really needs a bailout? There's a lot of information at the site, and I think they're onto something. I think that this is a moment. Sure, we're going to pause, we're going to think, we're going to try to take this opportunity to refocus our priorities and look ahead, not short-term panic, but long-term plan. We've seen where short-term panic gets us. This is the time not to go silent on your representatives, because I think this is when they get under pressure. They're going to take a break. They're going to get under pressure. We're going to see another package proposed around about Thursday when we're all so distracted by the Sarah Palin debate that maybe we won't notice what goes down. Mario is on the line listening on K-Talk in L.A. Hey, Mario, how are you?
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. You're a very smart person.
Thank you.
I feel that this Wall Street bailout, Laura, is a plan by Paulson and Bush to get all the money out of the Social Security, and I'll tell you why. I'll be brief. You see, first of all, the Treasury Secretary Paulson has been planning this emergency so-called crisis bailout plan for over 6 months now. And because the Federal Reserve bailed out the AIG, there's no more money in the Federal Reserve. Now, if Secretary Paulson gets access to all the money in the Treasury with no oversight, eventually there'll be no more money left. And when he gives it all to Wall Street, it won't circulate back into the economy. It'll just evaporate into the hands of the fat cats of Wall Street and into foreign banks. And from then on, the Federal Reserve will just print money with no gold to back it up, and the price of gold will double, and the value of the dollar will plummet. And
the sky is falling. The sky is falling. The sky is falling.
And then the federal government will be forced to get all the money out of the Social Security.
Oh.
And that's a scandal no one wants to talk about.
Well, Mario, I don't know. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You know, I know one thing, that there is a concrete plan on the platform of the John McCain campaign to privatize Social Security. And now, would you have liked your Social Security savings to be invested in Wall Street this week? I think if ever there was a dead duck plan, that's it this week. As for the long-term plans, I don't go along with everything you just heard, but I will say this. I think that what we've seen this week, in these last 2 weeks, is kind of an attempted economic coup. You know, in Latin America, you see coups with ballots, with the rather bullets and batons. Here, I think what we've seen is an attempted coup with bailouts and blank checks. The result is the same. You tie the hands of whomever you elect come November. You may vote for a guy who is for growing social services and increasing programs and broadening the role of government in society, but you're not going to get it, because that guy is going to get to Washington, find that the, when he's got the keys of the Treasury in his hand, that the cabinet is bare. There's no money in there. It's all been committed already in the $700 billion giveaway to the bankers, or the banksters, as Danny Schechter quoted FDR earlier tonight. This is, in a sense, exactly what's been trying, what the landowning elite have been trying to do in Bolivia in the last few weeks and months, undermine a democratically elected president, in that case the president Evo Morales of Bolivia, and reassert control over the nation's resources because, hey, Mr. Morales wants to nationalize hydrocarbons, wants to nationalize the oil industry. They don't like that, so they've been taking to the streets trying to so destabilize his government that he can't rule no matter what people vote for. I think that's a little bit of what we've seen this week. So is there a long-term plan? I don't know, but you've sure got the elites trying to retain control. One of the things we saw today, though, was that it doesn't always work. There are some speed bumps along the way. Joy is on the line in Santa Cruz on a story that I'd like to know more about. Hi, Joy. Welcome.
Hi.
Glad to have you.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I've been listening to you since the beginning of Air America.
Uh-huh.
I began to discover you.
Back
and
in
I've
the
been
midst
watching
of
Grit
time.
TV.
Excellent.
And I love you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And one of these days, I would love to meet you.
Well, let's hope we can make that happen. We'll come out to Santa Cruz someday. And I'm so happy you're watching Grit TV. I'm glad you're tuning in.
Well, it's very lucky for me to have Link. Actually, it's FSTV that I'm watching it through. But
that's absolutely right. Free Speech TV. So what did you call about tonight, Joy?
I'm calling about something that is not being covered by the news.
Mm-hmm.
There were children gassed in Dayton in a Dayton mosque in There were children gassed in a mosque in Dayton, Ohio.
It's a truly outrageous story. Keep going. Tell it.
Okay. On Friday, on the day of the debate, a mosque in Dayton, Ohio was attacked by domestic... I wrote this, so I'm reading what I wrote. Was attacked by domestic terrorism. While women were praying in a separate room for Ramadan, two men evidently sprayed the daycare center with some sort of irritant that burned the lungs, throats, and eyes of these kids, and the mothers had to run in and rescue them. And they were mainly infants and toddlers. These were young children. And some of these people were Iraqi refugees who had gone to Syria and then came here. And I don't understand why nobody's covering this on the news.
No, it's a truly outrageous story. It was in the Dayton Daily News, and I was sent a link to it by somebody who had seen something in that paper and was furious that even the Cincinnati Inquirer hadn't picked it up. Sure enough, September 26, 300 worshippers sprayed with a chemical irritant while celebrating Ramadan. Don't forget it's Ramadan.
Yeah, Ramadan,
the biggest holiday of the year. Absolutely. They're at the Muslim Center of Greater Dayton. And indeed, the attack sent many men, women, and children to local hospitals, according to this report. Now, what I heard since is that this isn't out of the, you know, this isn't just a random event. Ohio, we've talked about it before, a key swing state, has been sort of littered with flyers advertising a DVD about Islamofascism, so-called.
It's called Obsession, a radical Islam's war against the West.
And some people are tying these attacks
to... not only in the newspapers, but into people's mailboxes.
Some people are tying these attacks, which I think since Friday we found out were committed by kids or young teenagers or something. Some people are tying those attacks to that kind of climate of hatred, so, you know, being fomented around this election.
Laura.
Yeah.
What do we do about this?
Well, do exactly what you just did, which is draw attention to it. And I think that you...
Why isn't this news covering it?
Well, you've done a good thing calling talk radio to get us to pay attention to it. Maybe what you need to be doing is calling all of the radio stations, including those that are less, less open to this kind of thing. See if they would respond. You can also write letters to your local newspaper. You can post things on the blog. It's huge. It is domestic terrorism. But the important point to make, Joy, I think, is that we often think... that the extremism around our elections is just rhetoric, is just, you know, language tactics. And this is just a reminder that in the same way the vilification of abortion providers and women who try to protect the right to choose in this country resulted in real-life attacks on real-life doctors, including killings, so too this climate of hate that some people are fomenting for partisan purposes can have a real toll in real people's lives. We've got to stop it. Joy, thanks for the call. I'm so glad you're out there. I'll think of you tomorrow on Grit TV. Appreciate it.
All right, love you.
See you. Bye. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. You can get more information at the Dayton Daily News. That's the only clip I've seen on this story. The attack happened September 26th. It didn't get the headlines. Maybe we can push it into the news. We'll be back with just a few more of your calls before the top of the hour. It's Monday. Black Monday? White Monday? What do you think? 800-989-1480. We'll be right back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Mike Malloy. The number is 800-989-1480. Yeah, I told you there were some strange votes today. Ayes, retro word for yeses. Maxine Waters, progressive Democrat from Los Angeles, voted for. While Barbara Lee, progressive Democrat from the Oakland area, Bay Area, voted against. You had Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas voting against. Well, take your pick. Corinne Brown, Kennedy, Pelosi, of course, all voted for it. Across the map here, maybe we'll see a sophisticated analysis in the next few hours or tomorrow morning, but boy, looking just at the vote call, Jan Schakowsky voted for it. I mean, it's just, it's all over in terms of political preferences, political tendencies, all over the map. Maurice Hinchy from New York, progressive from up in Woodstock area, voted against. We're going to take a while to see this really make any sense, but I think what you're looking at, obviously, are people that heard from their constituents, and that's you. I'm just talking about the Democrats. They are the Republicans the same way. I do think this is a moment where the bottom said not so fast to the top. The question is, what happens next? And that's where you come in. You can call us, 800-989-1480. I'll be back tomorrow on Wednesday. Brad Friedman will be here with a whole lot more information about the threats to your vote. But I really think that in the next couple of days that we get to chat together, I want to hear from you. If you could have your druthers, if you could just take a pause in this moment of sort of government-induced panic and think about what priorities you would like your representatives to set, what would those be? What would those look like? It's easy to call and say, vote no. And I'm glad so many of you did over the last few days of this week. But what would you like your folks to vote for? We'll try to talk about some more of that tomorrow. Meanwhile, a couple of callers left on the line. Let's hear from... All right, let's try Sean in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Laura, I'm doing okay. Hey, Brian Baird voted yay, so I was a little disappointed in that.
I'm telling you, it's a confusing vote call, roll call. I'm going to have to really take this home and look at it overnight.
Hey, I want to direct everybody to Alexander Coburn's editorial in the February 4 issue of The Nation titled Moody's, the Terrorist at Ground Zero. It's all about the ratings agencies and how they help to put together these collateralized debt obligations. It's a must-read for everybody.
Yep.
But anyway, the reason
them
I called...
Them and Phil Graham.
That's right. That's right. The reason I called, though, was that right now there's a battle over language going on, and mm-hmm. I think it's very important that we frame this issue in terms of the over-leverage of Wall Street rather than a subprime mortgage crisis or a credit crisis. In 2004, the five biggest brokerages went to the SEC and received a special exemption that allowed them to leverage themselves from 12 times to 40 times. So all of this nonsense about Fannie and Freddie and people not being able to pay their mortgages, that has nothing to do with it. Why does this bill have to be $700 billion when it's only about 5% of the people not paying their mortgages? The reason is that the Wall Street brokerages were insanely over-leveraged. Leverage crisis.
For those who don't know what leverage means, except for, you know, a big lever.
Think of it this way. In 1929, a big reason behind the stock market crash was that individuals were buying on margin. In this case, it's institutions buying on leverage. In other words, if you, as an individual, if you buy on margin, you have $1 and the broker loans you $9, mm-hmm. that you're leveraged 10 to 1. Well, so it's the same for the institutions. It's just it's a euphemism. Does that make sense?
Yeah, basically getting a lot for not very much.
Well, sure. Think of it as the brokerages buying on margin. It's just they're using the term leverage. And they were, for the longest time, it was a very boring industry. They were only allowed to be leveraged 12 to 1. But according to Lee Picard, a former SEC official, in 2004, they received this special exemption that allowed them to leverage themselves 40 to 1.
Because we were told they were too big to fail.
That's right. And that's why we have this crisis. It's not a subprime crisis. It's not a credit crisis. It's an over-leveraging crisis, and we need to fight over that language and not let them get away with this domination. You know, the mass media is just putting this subprime crisis all, you know, everywhere. It's Wall Street over-leveraging.
It's, all right. I appreciate that. They certainly get deals we wouldn't get. Maybe we can change the priorities there a little bit. Quickly, Chuck in Miami, welcome to the program. You've got about a minute.
Yeah, you know, I was a campaign manager for Corrine Brown. I was way back in the 80s when she first ran, and I was disappointed to see her vote yes.
She voted yes on this.
Yeah, she did. But, you know, I think what happens when you look at the fact that they voted all over the place, it shows the confusion of our representatives. That they I think a lot of them are just confused, and I think they're confused because the legislation, like the previous caller was talking about, it seems to always be ahead of the actual plan that they have. What they do is they seem to come out with, they seem to go and lobby some legislation to be brought in, but the plan is so far ahead that people don't see what they're doing. And I'm going to jump to something else really
quickly.
Well, but
I mean, the point that you're making that's important is that this wasn't just about leveraging or money. This was also about control. What we saw in this bill was a huge power grab by the Secretary of the Treasury and a power grab that would have remained in place through the next administration. So, yeah, you had the language of saving Wall Street, but you had the solution being fundamentally undemocratic, and fundamentally the process that they wanted to rush this through was, well, it was too much for folks who have had enough panic and rush. We've seen it get us into a war. We've seen it destroy our Bill of Rights. We finally said stop. I got to let you go. Thanks for the call, Chuck. We'll be back tomorrow. We can pick up this conversation where we've left off. I'm Laura Flanders. You can find out more about me and Grit TV at grittv.org. And I'll be back right here, same place, same time tomorrow, sitting in for Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night.